Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we don't suffer fools. Welcome in as we try to navigate this crazy clown world together. We've got a lot of stories to get to on your Monday. It's been a busy weekend. We're going to look at what the WHO is planning to do, the United Nations planning to do. You know, there was a lot of conjecture. Well, how is Biden going to win this election right now? Is he going to cancel the DNC, put us into a new round of lockdowns? Will there be some sort of emergency that would require mail-in ballots for all of us to stay home? Well, it looks like this new bird flu could be the answer that they've been looking for. Is it their disease X?
Well, they want you to once again be afraid of indoor spaces. That's all you need to know. I'm going to prove that to you. So play that out. What happened the last time?
Yeah.
We were told to be afraid of indoor spaces. Okay. Also, we're going to talk about Europe getting ready for a draft. Germany says, well, we think it's time for a gender neutral draft, which is interesting because they don't like biological sex in Germany. Now the laws allow you to change the sex of your infant baby. Okay. So, you know, when you say
draft, of course, it's not like for a football draft.
It's not fun like that. No. This is not for a fun thing. This is a draft for war, folks. War.
We're also going to look at an update on the Baltimore Bridge story, the Baltimore Bridge collapse. We've got a couple of big updates this afternoon on what's going on there. Something really fishy is happening with the Baltimore Bridge collapse story. We're going to get there. Plus, we've got a special guest today, Alexander Mercurius from the Duran is going to be joining us to talk about this massive offensive, which has just unfolded over the past 48 hours in the northern part of Ukraine, as Russian forces now are unleashing on a number of villages, which they have already captured. But is this the vaunted spring offensive we've been hearing so much about? We're going to talk about that and so much more on the show today. So welcome in. Hope everyone's doing well. Let us know where you're joining us from around the world. We are live here on this Monday. So good to see all of you guys. We're streaming live on Rumble. We're streaming live on YouTube, and we stream live on X. And pretty soon we're going to be doing that on BitChute as well, getting their live stream functionality up and running. So, you know, the more the merrier, the more places the merrier. So, yeah, let's get to it tonight.
All right. Well, get ready. We're about to see a new round of lockdowns over bird flu, possibly. Is this the disease X that they've been warning us about? 70 people in Colorado are being monitored for bird flu, even though none of them are showing symptoms. This is funny timing, and I'm going to show you why. Because just in April, a few weeks ago, the World Health Organization Dr. Jeremy Farrar said that bird flu may mutate to spread to human-to-human contact, and that mortality rate is extremely high in bird flu. Now, before we get to what he's saying, I would like to remind you who we're dealing with when we listen to Dr. Jeremy Farrar. He's a fraudster that changed the outcome of the Nature paper that told us that COVID did not come from a lab. So rewind the clock a little. It's 2020. You are not allowed to say that COVID leaked from a lab. We're told that that's racist. People are canceled from Twitter. The media tells you that that's an extremist Trumpism to say that COVID came from a lab. They published this paper in Nature Medicine. This was used by the government and the media to shut down all speculation that COVID may have come from a lab. Now, a couple years later, the Senate investigated this paper, and they showed an email, this email, in fact, from Dr. Jeremy Farrar, looking over the paper, yes, that one, and saying, oh, can I just micromanage a little bit, but can you change one sentence, which is basically the conclusion of the paper, from it is unlikely that COVID came from a lab to it is improbable. That's what he wanted changed, even though he's not one of the paper's authors. He's just changing the conclusion because he wants that. That's what that guy did. That means he's a liar and a fraud. He helped fake an academic paper to tell us that COVID didn't come from a lab, because we all know that COVID most likely came from a lab. We can say that now, right?
That's how science works. You can just change papers like that.
That's not how science works.
It's not? Oh, okay.
And it's not even like... It's not even like a clarification. Those are two totally different words, unlikely and improbable. Unlikely
yes!
means, well, probably, you know, it's not likely, but it's possible to happen. Improbable means like it could. It's like a one in a billion chance.
Yeah,
exactly.
Can we just put that back up so we can all look at his suggested edits? Because it's unethical while we rail about this. Keep railing, please.
I'll rail. Well, just think unlikely versus improbable. Like if you tell me it's unlikely that that bridge is going to collapse while I drive over it, I'm not going to drive over it. If you tell me it's improbable, I'll probably drive over it. You know, like there's a chance that there's a one in a billion chance that bridge is going to collapse. I'm just not, I'm going
to
drive over.
You cannot change scientific conclusions because you want them to be changed.
Oh.
You can't do that.
Can't do that. Okay.
You cannot do that. This same screen pissed off Philip last time, and I'm glad it pissed off Philip this time again because
secret is I'm always pissed off, but this pisses me off just slightly more.
It would be highly improbable for him not to be pissed off again.
You're right.
Or unlikely.
It's probable that this will continue to piss him off because he's a science purist. That's why Philip has a science background. So, okay, Jeremy Farrar, he's a liar and he's a fraudster. He never suffered any consequences for this, though. In 2022, he was appointed to the chief scientist at the World Health Organization, the WHO. So that's who we're dealing with when we're told that bird flu might actually mutate and be more dangerous. So, given how much that we trust him about as far as we can throw him, let's watch what he has to say.
That virus now evolves and develops the ability to infect humans and then critically the ability to go from human to human transmission. And we know that in the rare cases, I think off the top of my head, 400 or 500 cases so far of humans, the mortality rate is extraordinarily high. So to me, this is a major concern. The current outbreak, for want of a better word, in America amongst cows is really concerning as well, and also talks to this issue of transmission. We have to understand in those cow settings, sheds, how H5N1 is transmitting, because it may be evolving into transmitting in different ways. This is a huge concern, and I think we have to watch, more than watch, we have to make sure that if H5N1 did come across to humans with human-human transmission, that we were in a position to immediately respond with access equitably to vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics.
Okay. So right now, we know that it's very rare for bird flu to spread human to human. But he's saying it's probable that that could happen. Now, given he doesn't know the definition of those words, he thinks it's interchangeable with likely. Okay, how are we going to respond?
But that's the thing. Likely and probable are kind of interchangeable. They both mean the same thing. But unlikely and improbable do not.
Okay. Yes.
Like, do you agree or no?
Yeah, I'm taking liberties to say that he doesn't know the negative version. You're right.
Sorry.
Okay. Yes, but given the fact that he plays fast and loose with scientific conclusions, and we know right now that bird flu does not transmit easily from human to human, what are we going to do with that? He says vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics, and control of cows, he says, which is so funny.
Oh, you want to control cows, kill meat, so we can't eat meat anymore?
Yeah. Oh, well, hang on. I'm going to show it to you in writing. This is not my conjecture, right? Sounds like, oh, here she goes again about the globalists. Well, they wrote it down. I'm not making it up. In April, we got the updated WHO pandemic treaty that they want all member states to sign in order to hand over power for them to control the possibility of the next pandemic and when it comes. Okay, the first part there says they want to promote one health for pandemic prevention, and that includes recognizing the interconnection between peoples, animals, and the environment. Okay, so they go on to say that they need regular reviews of each country's farming practices, basically. We need to come in there regularly and see what we can do, because if we don't like your industry and how you're eating or producing milk or what have you, we're going to do something about it. So everybody's farming is everybody's business now. So your nation's sovereignty, out the window. One of the things they also want to control is every indoor space. Now, this one's new because just last week, the WHO released updated language to describe airborne pathogens in a bid to increase international cooperation in the event of a new and expected global pandemic, they say. So during the pandemic, they said COVID spreads through droplets and people freaked out and said, oh, but it's in the air too. And now their official word is, you're right, it can be in the air as well. And so it can be transmitted, and that's what is happening possibly in Colorado. This is from the United Nations report on bird flu, and this quote here is, in fact, from our friend, Dr. Farrar, saying, do the milking structures of cows create aerosol? It's in the environment which we're living. It's in the transport system that's spreading around the country. This is a huge concern, and we have to make sure that if H5N1 did come across human-to-human transmission, we're in a position to immediately respond with equitable vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics. We just saw him say that. So guess what, though? Okay, now we're supposed to be worried, not just human-to-human. So we masked, we kept six feet away, that kind of thing. But now just what is in the air? Is it in the air around you that you are sitting right now surrounded by bird flu and you didn't even know it? Well, here's how much they... And okay, yes, viruses are not new to our world, right? We have always been surrounded by them in all manner of ways. But now that they're saying it can be in the air anywhere... You could literally be like, what's that movie where the guy's stranded with a tiger on a boat? Like, you could still have airborne pathogens.
Life of Pi.
Yeah. So, like, literally, it's going to be everywhere. But they especially want you to be afraid of indoor spaces. But they have a solution, Meet Area. This is a WHO CERN Labs tool that launched last week that will calculate the risk of disease spread in all indoor spaces. It will give you a risk percentage based on everything about your space. Now watch them explain it. Again, this is not my conjecture, they're doing it. And then ask yourself, do you want to give this information to the WHO and allow them to assess everything you do with a risk factor? Okay, so what they're saying is that they have this tool. You can put in the space of your office space, and they will give you a risk percentage. So here it's saying, oh, this space is great. It's 8.8% risk factor that you're going to be transmitting COVID in the air. This one is specifically used for COVID, but you can see that they're going to, you know, keep it, I guess, running for any disease that they want. So this lady opens the window and, oh, look, your risk factor just went from 8 to 4. But then it shows you people having person-to-person conversations in just a second. And that number, see, look, oh, no, it went all the way up to 16 because yeah, you're talking to somebody in person. But now watch when...
He's talking to her in front of a window.
Right.
They're both basically dead.
But now they just put masks on. So it says, oh, now your risk factor is 1.8, which is bullshit. We know about masking and COVID transmission, but okay. And now that guy across the way put on a mask and the number went even further down. So you see what this is telling you, that it makes me think that one, masks are coming back because they think that it will help prevent transmission of things inside. And it tells me that in-person work is about to be attacked. Again, it tells me that this is interesting timing with an election coming, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that, right? So the big concern right now, the talk, the rumors, the scuttlebutt around Washington over the past few weeks is that we are not going to have a Democratic National Convention. That, well, there are going to be too many protests. If that's not the case, then there's threat of airborne illness right now. We don't know. We don't want to have that many people together. It would be irresponsible of us Democrats to have so many people in one room. And we also don't want to, you know, hurt the health of the president, President Biden. So this will be a sort of cloistered Democratic National Convention like we saw in 2020. He won't have to go. We'll keep him under lock and key.
Yeah.
We'll feed him a bunch of medicine.
Can read from a teleprompter.
He can read from a teleprompter. I mean, of course, they do that at the DNC anyway, but the things. But anyway.
But and debates also, can be fed from a prompter.
True. But bigger, more importantly than all of that, though, is mail-in voting.
Yes.
Right? It's mail-in ballots, right? That's the real thing here. So stay home, people. They want you to stay home. The air out there is going to kill you. You know, just stay in your house because there could be a flock of deadly birds flying around.
Mm-hmm.
Or the cows are now aerosol spraying all of us.
Right.
And they need to be culled, and you need to stay inside with masks on and not leave the house.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a World Economic Forum wet dream.
I didn't want to wrap back around. I was going to wrap back around at the end, but I'll do it now because you just brought it back up. But how the hell are they milking these cows that are rendering the milk airborne?
With spray bottles?
I know. Like that, when they said aerosol spray, I'm like, what are they shooting? Like a mist? Like a misting cows? Like what the hell's happening over there?
I don't know. Dylan Wings in the chat says, this is so transparent because it's not something that I am just connecting the dots. They wrote it out for you. We're just watching what they do and trying to keep track because it's absolutely transparent.
And the World Economic Forum has told us, I mean, we're going to talk tomorrow about cash and on the show and working on a segment now about all that. But the World Economic Forum has publicly stated like COVID was really like a trial run for this. And it did really, really great things for them to advance their agenda. They've said this publicly. Like, this is not a tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. This is what they've said. It's in their documents. They've confirmed this. And we all knew that that was a trial run. It was not as strong as they wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So can they find something that will kill 1 in 4 Americans, as they say?
Okay.
Or 1 in 4 people.
Let's say what we can say now about bird flu so that we can at least have it on record, because okay. I'm afraid that we won't be able to say this later. Number one, bird flu is typically not transmitted from person to person. It's very rare. There are many strains of bird flu that have very low mortality rates, and then there are some that have higher mortality rates. We have no idea what we're dealing with right now. Also, our individual health and strength, our comorbidities, your weight, your pre-existing health conditions, all of these things absolutely are a factor in how you may deal with it if you are exposed. So natural immunity and natural health and strength is a factor. We couldn't say those things during the pandemic when COVID was being weaponized. So I want to say them now because I am afraid that I won't be able to say them in short order because of the writing on the wall.
And yes, as more and more countries then adopt the World Health Organization treaty, the pandemic treaty, we got word today. Anne Merrill Klosterman, who's a friend of the show, she wrote today that against the express wish of the majority in the House, the demissionary cabinet will agree to a large international pandemic treaty of the World Health Organization of the United Nations in the Netherlands. So this is coming to the Netherlands. They're agreeing to this, even though the people don't want it. Like, these things are going to be rolled out in force now.
Well, Dr. Kat Lindley said on this show just a few weeks ago when the new treaty was rolled out that if some countries tank it, they may tank it on behalf of all of us. Because in the United States, our leaders are not doing anything to stop it. In the UK, there is some movement, but it doesn't seem like they're actually going to not sign it. So most Western countries are doing balls about it. They're just going to go and sign, right? But there are countries like Japan, New Zealand, Australia, Brazil, I don't have them all in my notes, that may just tank it for the rest of us, and then we will all owe them a solid.
I hope so. Let's see. Let's hope so. More news coming here on the show tonight. We're going to talk about the Germany, France, UK triumvirate pushing for war conscription, the new bringing back the draft, of course. Germany wanting to lower their age to 18 and go gender neutral. So men, women, it doesn't really matter. You're going to be signed up to go to war with Russia. The same thing in the UK and perhaps in France as well. This all happening right now as Russia has making major advancements in the northern part of Ukraine. This sort of spring offensive has started and Ukrainians are surrendering by the dozens. Those are the reports this afternoon. We're going to talk about all of that coming up a little bit later on the show. On the show, the big show. Sound like
you're like Australian.
No, what's his name? Ed.
The show.
The Beatles are on the show tonight. Welcome to the big show. Why can't I think? Ed Sullivan. Sorry, couldn't think of it. Okay, but first, everyone thinks mortgage rates are extremely high, but it's not entirely true, actually. Mortgage rates are actually much lower than the average credit card rate of 22%. Think about how much interest you're going to pay on that credit card if you're going to only pay minimum payment every month. If you're a homeowner, a cash-out refinance with American Financing can actually help you pay off that debt and lower your monthly expenses, and the mortgage interest is tax-deductible. They're saving homeowners just like you an average of $854 a month. Their salary-based mortgage consultants will show you how much you can save every month with no upfront fees, no obligation. You may even close in as fast as 10 days, possibly delay two mortgage payments, giving you greater savings up front. So get the financial relief you need right now and stop living paycheck to paycheck. Call American Financing today at 866-890-8434. That's 866-890-8434. Or visit AmericanFinancing.net/redacted, and we'll have a link in the description for you. AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
Germans, get your teenagers ready for war that they don't want. That means all teenagers, not just the boys, because Germany doesn't believe in gender. That means German teenage girls, biological girls, being drafted into a war with Russia that most Europeans don't support. European politicians support this war. The people of Europe don't. Last year, Germany said they wanted to add about 203,000 troops to their current military by 2031. Now they're saying there is no way to do this without conscription, which is so interesting. Like, oh, we sold you a war. We told you Putin's the bad guy. Why aren't they just lining up in droves?
Yeah, don't you want to go to war with Russia? You remember how that went for Germany the last time?
Good point. Do you want to bring back
an entire... We'll go back to Stalingrad again. Like, well, can you rechange the name back to that? Let's go see how that works out for you. The famine, the disease, the death and destruction.
It's a spring offensive. They're not going in the winter. That was what we're all going
to. Oh, we've learned. The party is in better weather.
And Russia's now much weaker as an army.
Yes, this is all sarcasm, in case you're not picking up what Clayton's putting down. Okay, so they're saying they need to make plans for a warpflicht. How do you say that word? Warpflicht.
What word are you pointing to?
This word, warpflicht.
No. Warpflicht?
That one.
Oh. Warpflicht.
Warpflicht.
Warpflicht. Yes.
That means mandatory draft or military service. I'm smiling because my German's funny. This is not funny. So the German ministry now has laid out three options to reform the Wehrpflicht rules, the rules of conscription. This was in a leaked document from Minister Boris Pistorius, and he's expected to choose one of three options and officially present it in June. Now, remember that timeline, June, according to Die Welt newspaper. Sorry. One option would be either required military registration for all young people at age 18. Another would require mandatory military registration for males, again, only after 18. And the third option would be making mandatory registration and potential draft compulsory for both men and women at age 18. And they're calling this gender neutral conscription, which stands to reason, right? Because Germany now allows parents to change their child's gender at birth. So if you abolish biological sex, you can't draft based on sex, right? I mean, if it were me and I were giving birth to a boy in Germany, knowing now that the German government wants to take this precious baby and throw him into a war machine against Russia, I'd be like, nope, this is a girl, right? But now you can't do that. They're going to take it no matter what. So I don't know what you're going to do. Like other Western nations, Germany has very low military enrollment, meaning they have not succeeded at selling us this war and why your body should die for it. While their leaders just show a high appetite for war. Like in France this weekend, President Emmanuel Macron said that France is not at war, but he left the matter very open-ended with this if statement at the bottom. It's loosely translated by Twitter, so don't blame me for. If you go too far and threaten the interests of France and the security of Europe, then we exclude nothing. This dude cannot make up his melon. He keeps saying things indicating that France will go to war in Ukraine and then walking them back when his citizens absolutely freak out. And now they're calling for a draft in the UK for young people as well. An army chief says that everyone in the UK needs to think like troops. Okay, what does that mean? You need to think like a soldier because they want you to think you are at war. Look at this graphic. These are the countries that NATO wants to start pulling troops from to reach 90,000 in order to, as the Sun says, prepare for World War III drills or do drills for World War III. Okay, so all those countries there, They want your warm bodies. They want your teenagers. They want your sons and daughters. Lithuania has been waving their hands for a few weeks now, saying, we're ready. We got people. We'll go. This is happening because Ukraine has allowed its army to die off. So if you think you're not following them in these footsteps, you are mistaken. And now they've had to implement draconian draft rules, and Ukrainians are trying to flee in order to avoid further conscription. Some dying while they are fleeing. Just last week, these six people died trying to swim away. They are so desperate to get away from Ukraine. So young people of Europe, is this your future? Dying or escaping a country that wants to throw you into a war that you do not buy? Well, British MP Andrew Bridgen says, actually, we're already at war with Russia, and they're just not telling you that. And he has a timeline for when we are going to be given this, and it lines up with this German draft deadline that we just learned about. Remember I said they'd tell us in June? So listen to what he has to say.
Rishi wants out. We are actually at war with Russia now.
We've got.
I haven't told you.
So say that again.
We're actually at war with Russia now. I met with Andrei Kellin, the Russian ambassador in London, a couple of months ago, and he said that we know that your people are firing those Storm Shadow missiles at us out of Ukraine because you couldn't train the Ukrainians to do it. We know you're doing it, and I mean everybody knows that. There are lots of US, UK, French. The French are in there.
I thought it was the Brits were down on the ground and special advisors training sessions teaching them and showing them.
Isn't that how...
But they were apparently... Yeah. That's how we started with the Vietnam War.
Vietnam War, yeah.
Dude, what the frack are we doing poking the bear? That's really stupid.
They're determined to get us into a war with Russia. And thank God we've got someone in Putin who at least has got some brains.
Right. Now you sound like a Putin lover.
Well, I'm not. I'm not convinced any of them are any good. But at the end of the day, if you look at the facts, since 91, we've moved NATO 1,000 miles nearer to Moscow. They haven't moved nearer to us.
No, they haven't.
Okay. Now, I want to apologize. Normally I catch the F words and try to bleep them, and I forgot. So I apologize for that. I just missed that one. That one's on me. Now, he later says that this war is not wanted by anyone who is, you think of, that's a leader. This is Agenda 3030 from the World Economic Forum, and that the 0.1% of the richest people in the world want this, and they don't care that your teenager will be drafted or the young person in your life will be drafted. They don't care at all. Watch.
It's not a race between the blue and the red team to see who crosses the finishing line. This is a baton handover.
Exactly.
On all the big issues, net zero, COVID response, the WHO, the trans agenda.
Who's pushing it then? Who's pushing it? Who's pulling the levers?
It's Agenda 2030. It's the World Economic Forum, the 0.1% of the richest people in the world.
And the globalists?
The globalists, yeah. The people who make... Listen, to make money... All we need is next week's newspapers today, wouldn't we? Well, if you own next week's newspapers, you know what's going to happen and what's going to be reported, regardless of what the facts are. And that's the position these...
So we're heading
and
for
also,
war.
And also, yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Well, we're actually already in it. They're not going to tell the people probably till July or August, maybe a bit later. And I think Rishi wants out.
But hold on one second. I mean... If we go to war with Russia, we're talking about potentially nuclear war.
I know.
Do they understand what they're playing with?
Well, we have a nuclear deterrent.
We're not playing with fire.
I know. And it goes against all our defense thinking.
But even
we have nuclear weapons, so then no one would do that to us. So why would we do it to someone who's got 20 times more nuclear, 30 times more nuclear weapons than we've got?
And not just that, their air defense capability, the S-500, it's a million times better than what we've got. We've got nothing to that.
We've got nothing that can stop any of their...
What is it? We've got Arrow or something? I mean, that can't do jack shit with their hypersonic missiles.
I've seen a report that we just do not have any defense for the UK against the Russian... Arsenal.
Because you know they've got hypersonic missiles.
Yeah.
We've got nothing against that.
Nothing against that.
Okay, so that's cheerful. But, again, did you hear that? That they will finally admit it in this summer when we get the full conscription plan from Germany. We'll see. Yeah, we're at war. We have been for a while. We need more warm bodies. You in? So July or August, that was not my big plans for the summer. Was it yours to be involved in a war? Let me know what you think of this and whether or not you want anything to do with it. And, you know, normally we say, tell your elected representatives that you don't want this. What he's indicating here is it doesn't matter. They're not actually calling the shots. And I'm sorry to leave you with that downer because I don't know what to do with it beyond just talk about it, I guess, and see it.
Well, I mean, I'm going to ask Alexander, I'm curious about this in a minute or so, but I think it's interesting to think about this massive offensive that's unfolding in the north right now in Russia over the past 48 hours.
Yeah.
Ukraine has no troops left. They have no forces left. And to his point, they're telling them flat out, we know that these Ukrainians are not firing these Storm Shadow missiles. We know that they're not doing the work. We know that they're not. So we're about to come to blows here because NATO is going to have to do something. Either they go home with their football and they pack up and go home, or they're going to have to confront Russia as they inch closer to where these positions are. And so something's going to happen. There's like a game of chicken right now. And I don't think Russia is bluffing on this. Like, this is an existential crisis for Russia having NATO on its back doorstep right now. So we'll see what these countries do in Europe. But
yeah, I mean, I just want to go on record and say I'm happy to lose that game of chicken. Let's just stop.
Stop right now.
Let's just, yeah, let's call it. Let's go to peace talks. I don't need to win that. So,
yeah,
not at the expense of anybody's lives.
Well, we got more news to get to here. We're going to talk about the Baltimore Bridge collapse and big update here. A couple of big updates, actually, as Baltimore is looking to clean that whole thing up. Today, they were actually supposed to blow it up with a whole bunch of explosives. They're warning the city, hey, don't come down. It's going to look like fireworks. Do not come down. Nothing to see here. But they had some bad weather, so they had to postpone it. There they go. They couldn't do that. But we're going to have a big update on the FBI investigation on that side of it here in just a moment. Plus, we're going to talk about this Russian launching this offensive in just a moment. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Policy Genius, because they are the country's leading online insurance marketplace. It saves you time and money so you can provide your family with financial safety nets starting today. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million worth of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval. You can avoid unnecessary medical exams. Have you ever gotten positive feedback, about anything you've experienced with insurance? Chances are maybe not, but I'm going to tell you right now, with our friends at Policy Genius, we've heard from so many people who've signed up watching Redacted. They've told us, thank you for telling me about these guys. These guys are great. We've signed up at Policy Genius and we had a great experience. David signed up for Policy Genius. A lot of people are wondering where David is tonight. David's in the process of working on our new studio right now. And so he's going to be dealing with that for a little while now. So he might be off until we get some good internet set up in the new studio, but he's busy kind of working on that right now. But David signed up for Policy Genius and got his free life insurance quotes. And was able to do it. He was like, you guys were talking about it, and I signed right up, and I couldn't believe it. And it had been fantastic. So, and our audience has as well. It's easy to compare quotes.
We used it for that new studio that you are talking about.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yes, we got a great quote, and it was cheap for the year, and I was shocked at how good of a rate we got. So, yep.
See, I didn't even know that. All right, so we're building the new studio, and we used Policy Genius to get on that
rental location.
Awesome. All right. There you go. So, hey, we don't even need to listen to Trustpilot or Google reviews. Just listen to us. We're using it and we like it. Policy Genius gives you unbiased advice from a licensed expert on their support team. They're fantastic. So head on over to policygenius.com or click the link in our description to get your free life insurance quotes. See how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Check them out. Policygenius.com. So our thanks to them for supporting the show. All right. You want to say hi to anybody in the chat?
Horton who is what Daniel Roche said. So Horton, here's a who.
Okay.
Yeah, that was good. Okay. Well, let us know where you're joining us from today and whether or not you are in a place that you feel like the discussion of a draft is heating up and what you might do about it. Those are the things that we can share with each other if we have any ideas. Because sometimes we see comments, they say, this video, they tell us all about it, but they don't tell us what to do. Well, we don't know what to do. We're journalists. We're just telling you what is happening. What are the facts? You know, it's not for it's for us collectively to solve it. We're just people.
I think it's interesting. Like, I think about my daughter and like, because she's 17, and like and her peers, like how connected they are to information, like through the way they get it. They're so much better informed at their age than I was at their age. How the hell are you going to draft them into a war that they know is?
Oh, that's such a good point. They know the actual reason behind it. Yeah.
Because they're going to go out there where they're going to like go shoot those people and be like, no. Like, why? So you can make more money? I'm not doing it. I couldn't imagine like them getting my daughter to you know, like brainwashed to the point where she would want to kill people for something she knows is corruption.
Right.
And I think her generation is much more informed than mine was.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well,
and that's why they want to get rid of social media. I mean, that's why they absolutely want to ban TikTok. They want to ban, you know, the awareness of what's been happening in Israel. Like, that's why Israel wants TikTok banned, of course. US congressman trying to blame it on China. But anyway, yeah, there's more awareness now. And social, if they can't control it, they try to control X. They're trying their damnedest to control that platform.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have control over those platforms. They do have control over the media. Of course, the major media publications, the newspapers, New York Times, Washington Post, CBS, NBC, ABC, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, I think social media does serve a purpose as long as you're not sitting there addicted to it 24 hours a day.
Well, yeah, and they have to, because it's not like 17-year-olds right now even know what the hell the New York Times is or the Washington Post. They're like, right. Well, I have no idea what that is. I think I saw them mentioned on TikTok. You know, they're not on X, really.
And they're making fun of it.
TikTok is where they're at.
Yeah, I think, yeah, most, and that's great. I think a whole younger generation now hopefully understands that these corporate media publications are corrupt and they're just an extension of the intelligence community. They're the propaganda.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've got more news to get to. Let's talk about the Baltimore Bridge. So a quick update now and some major new developments in the Baltimore Bridge cyber attack. Something really fishy is going on here. But first, early this morning in Baltimore, we were about to see some explosions. They were about to blow up the rest of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, demolishing what's left of the bridge and then sinking it into the bay. Authorities said they were going to set off explosives that would look like fireworks. They were planning to tell people, you know, don't come and watch, don't come and see. Stay at home, but bad weather has put a damper on those plans. Here's where look at this, guys. I mean, the ship is still here. The ship is still stuck under a large portion of this. This was Friday. This photo was Friday.
Jeez.
So they still haven't managed to get this pancake out of here. And of course, yeah, they were still concerned about, you know, what kind of chemicals are, you know, leaking out of these things. We don't fully know all the details, what's in these things.
This is a shocking photo when you look at those dudes just looking around like, what are we going to do about this?
Well, and think about the six people that were killed, you know, who were on that bridge doing construction work at the time and were crushed and killed and thrown into the water as a result of this. So crews are trying to get this ship removed, but it's still there. But we're also getting now our first videos from the first responders. Now, you would think, oh, maybe we'd see this info, the police departments, you know, the Port Authority, whatever, would release these videos because we want to see what, you know, we want public information, right? No. They held them back. The only reason we got to see these videos once again is through Freedom of Information Act requests by the media. So the Baltimore Banner managed to get their hands on more than a dozen videos on Friday from the Maryland Natural Resources Police. So here's the first body cam footage that we've seen. This is the very first video from a first responder in the waterway as police came up on the crash. Watch.
Dude, this is f-ing bad. Like, there is no bridge. Yeah, me and Charlie are coming in, and it's like, are you kidding me? It's like, something's missing here in the skylight. The whole center span is gone completely. It's in the water.
So, six construction workers, as I mentioned, were repairing potholes on Interstate 695 and were killed in that disaster. So there's a human toll on this cyber attack. Meanwhile, the FBI continues to stonewall reporters who are trying to get answers about their investigation. Now, recall, 20 days after the Dolly shipping container struck the bridge, 20 days, the FBI finally decided to open a criminal investigation. a criminal investigation into the cyber attack. And at the time, we wondered what the hell took so long, and why did the Biden administration, the very morning of the attack, like as the sun came up, President Biden told us how he takes the train over this bridge all the time. There's no train tracks on this bridge, so I don't know how he does that. But there's nothing to see here. His, you know, internal investigation among his Biden staffers, there's nothing to see, nothing nefarious here. Don't worry about it. And by the way, we are going to rebuild it, he said. Don't worry about it. Move along. Nothing to see here. So why did he say that? Well, then why 20 days later did the FBI open an investigation, a criminal investigation? First of all, I'm still wrapping my brain about how did the Biden administration conduct an investigation? The NTSB didn't arrive there for a few more days. They weren't even on board the bridge. They weren't even on board the boat after it struck for days. The FBI took 20 days to get there. And Biden's own cybersecurity experts went on the record, off the record, but they went and told us that, in fact, it was a cyber attack. Inside the Biden administration admitted to this. So what investigation did they actually do? Someone should ask Corinne Jean-Pierre in the White House press briefing room. You know, President Biden said that you guys had figured it out. There was nothing to see here. What was he basing that on? Can a reporter please follow up with that question? I would love to know the answer to that. They won't let independent media like Redacted into that room. They only allow the corporate media into that room. So what happened? Now, this weekend, we learned that the FBI has confiscated all the cell phones of the crew members, the 20 crew members of the Dolly, and they haven't given them back. So this is a great question. Why did the FBI seize the phones of Dolly's crew? Were they told, they were told by the FBI that they would get them back in a few days? That's what the FBI told the crew of the Dolly. Well, that hasn't happened, and it's been weeks. Been weeks. What are they looking for exactly? Location data? Tracking info? Any photos they might have taken of the crash that might aid in their investigation? Those things are easy to get within a few, you know, the first few days. You can pull those right off immediately. So what would they need this stuff for right before the ship went into that pylon? Also, interestingly, remember, of course, we have a number of minutes of 2 minutes of the most important data was removed from the black box. It's not there on the black box recording. So was it something on the phones that they were hoping to find in that? We don't know, because the FBI won't say anything. They're being mum about it and being quiet. The crew, though, are now demanding the FBI return their phones. That's one big piece of this. But the other is that CBS News has learned now that the crew members have been confined to the ship.
What?
Yeah. What? Exactly. Yes, they've been stuck on the ship ever since the attack.
Well, it's almost 2 months now.
Wait.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but weren't they just saying, you said like what, Friday? They were saying there's going to be a controlled demolition on some of the
today.
They're
going to control.
Like, if I was on that ship, I'd be like, wait, time out.
Exactly.
Can I go to shore when you do that?
Like, can you guys go to the stern of the ship? Because on the front, we're going to be blowing some stuff up. You might want to just go to the back of the ship. No, you're confined to the ship.
Well, they can get off, right? Should we let them off?
So what's going on here? Now, according to CBS News, Reverend Josh Messick with the Baltimore International Seafarers Center told CBS News that he's been in constant contact with the crew members over the past 6 weeks, and they are on board and confined. What? He says, quote, to CBS News, "It's been really taxing for them. They're well cared for by the company. Just to be confined to one space for so long is incredibly stressful. They're being confined to this space." Again, what? Why? So help me understand this. They're confined to the ship. They're confined to the ship, and they, why? Because we can't talk to them? We're not allowed to talk to them? Because if they get off the ship, reporters would want to speak with them, right? That's exactly what would happen.
Yeah.
So you keep them on a ship that's like, being guarded by the FBI and the NTSB, then you can't talk to anybody that's on the ship. Oh, and by the way, you've taken their phones away from them, so they can't communicate with reporters or other individuals. Now, they did give them like backup phones, but they don't have any contacts, whatever. So no one...
What if they want to swim? off. Like, hey, I'm done with this. I'm going to swim away. Will they stop them?
They're well cared for by the company, according to CBS News. So remember, if it wasn't intentional, why would the FBI still be involved in this? Right? Because if this was an accident, as we were told by the Biden administration, the Department of Transportation would be handling this. Instead, an intelligence agency is handling this. Something about this entire situation is very fishy, and something doesn't sound right. Let us know your thoughts on this in the comments below. But those two things really stood out to me. I was diving deep into these new pieces of information. I was like, this doesn't add up. Something is really bizarre here.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, my jaw is still on the floor. I cannot figure out, like, to find out that they're still on the ship, like, there can't be a reason for it. There's a logical reason for that.
Yeah, let me just repeat what CBS News is reporting, and now Hot Air is reporting as well. Reverend Josh Messick with the Baltimore International Seafarers Center told CBS that he has been in constant contact with the crew members on the ship over the past 6 weeks. He says, quote, it's really been taxing for them. They're well cared for by the company. Just to be confined to one space for so long is incredibly stressful.
The company says they're well cared for.
Okay. Well, I mean, the company is telling Josh Messick at the Baltimore International Seafarers Center.
We have no firsthand word that they say they're okay.
There's been no reporting, and there's been, to my knowledge, none of these, we don't know who these people are. I mean, they haven't been out speaking to reporters because they're on the ship. So they're there when the NTSB is coming. They're having their phones confiscated by the FBI. And on top of that, there is about to be a controlled demolition of the bridge today. And they're still there on the ship, unless they've been ferreted away under the cloak of darkness and we don't know about it. But
can we call OSHA? Will they get involved?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to blow up the bridge in front of us here. And
Surely we're not going to blow people up, right? Surely. Yeah,
they are. And don't call me Shirley. All right, we've got more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to be talking about this Russian offensive in Ukraine as Putin has just launched this big, big move. And in fact, according to sources, it's not even the full weight of the army just yet. It's just a chunk of it. So we're going to speak to Alexander Mercurius on that. And we're going to ask him, too, about what the UK, Germany, and France are trying to do in all of this. I will ask him that in a second. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Lear Capital, because I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news. Hopefully you have, but gold hitting an all-time high. Precious metals off the charts right now. The demand is off the charts right now. And the BRICS countries, we learned, of course, this weekend, just announcing that upcoming in October, they will be moving away from the U.S. dollar. They will be announcing officially their currency, which is backed by gold. Backed by gold and commodities. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. over the past few hours has come out and said, we need to have our U.S. treasuries backed by gold. They are not. They are backed by debt right now. Of course, Richard Nixon took them off the gold standard in the early 1970s. And since then, it's been inflation heaven. And we've been devaluing the currency year after year after year. The U.S. dollar is on a massive decline right now. I mean, commodities to me right now is the only game in town. Whether you're investing in tin companies or a copper, or you're actually buying real gold like we are, making sure you have gold as part of your family's portfolio is, I mean, to me, it's madness if you don't. Even if just a portion, if you've got like $5,000 in US dollars in a savings account at banks that are now being run upon, can you convert that to gold? Our friends at Lear Capital can help you do that. They can help you set up an account where you can buy gold and silver and have it sent right to your house, or stored off-site. They'll even take, if you've got an old IRA sitting around or an old 401k, you can roll your old 401k, an old IRA, into a self-directed gold IRA. That's right. We just did that, in fact, in our family, where you can actually take an old IRA that's sitting there in stocks or whatever and roll it into gold, where you have self-directed control and you're not paying fees to Wall Street. Call them. Just get on the phone with them. They're such a fantastic team. They're Americans. They will answer your phone call. They're not in some like little office in India somewhere. They will answer your call. 1-800-613-3557. This is an American patriotic company. They've been around for decades. Thousands of five-star reviews. Go to learredacted.com as the website. But also, I just encourage you to get on the phone. Have a great conversation with these guys. Get your free gold guide. They have a $3,200 gold guide right now. That's the price target for gold. And just get that free guide so you can learn more about it. 1-800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. Well, it seems undeniable over the past 48 hours, Russia has launched a rather large, if you want to say massive, offensive in the northern part of the country. And this is the, maybe this is the spring offensive we've been hearing so much about now that the ground has firmed up. We are also hearing reports of widespread Ukrainian surrenders. Is this a new trend? Is the message getting out that they will either be able to surrender and live a peaceful life eventually or be slaughtered on the battlefield? We're also hearing, of course, that NATO seems to be ramping up once again, beating the drums of war with Germany and the UK and France pointing towards perhaps NATO involvement in this war. So much to talk about and a big shakeup internally inside of Russia. We thought, who better to ask than Alexander Makuras from the Duran, kind enough to join us today from London with his brilliant assessments, as always, about military strategy and geopolitics. Alexander, great to see you. Welcome back to the show.
I'm delighted to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. So first, I guess let's start with this offensive. The Western media has been silent on it, not surprisingly. Nothing really in the United States to talk about a Russian offensive, but it appears that maybe not a full-scale spring offensive, but maybe a large one nonetheless. What do you know about what we're seeing with the Russian forces in the north?
Well, as you correctly said, there's a lot of fog of war. But the impression I've had is that over the first couple of days, the immediate period that you've been mentioning, the last 48 hours, we've not yet seen the Russians commit their main army, their main forces. Apparently, this was an advance by relatively lightly equipped infantry troops crossing the frontier into Ukraine. And what happened was that even as these infantry advanced, the Russian Air Force has been very active, lots of drones, lots of artillery strikes, and the Ukrainian defenses collapsed. It was much more unexpected by the Ukrainians themselves, and I think by the Russians. But a string of villages falling one after the other, tumbling one after the other into Russian hands. No sign of an organized Ukrainian defense. No sign of minefields or fortified lines about which we've been hearing so much. The Ukrainians have now sacked the general who was in charge. There's reports that the Ukrainian leadership are in recriminations with each other. The intelligence chief, a man called Budanov, is saying that it's all the fault of the military chief, Sirsky, that this thing has gone as badly as it has. And there's lots of reports that the Ukrainians, facing what is looking like a debacle on their northern borders, and unsure how far the Russians intend to go, are now pulling in troops from every single part of their front lines, weakening their front lines even further. Now, for me, what this shows is the fragility that Ukraine has reached at this point in the war. A relatively limited offensive by the Russians, but an unexpected one, or at least it shouldn't have been unexpected because it's been much talked about, but a new offensive that they weren't really prepared for. And it's creating a crisis right across the entire Ukrainian battlefronts. And that tells you that Ukraine, at least tells me, that Ukraine is literally at the end of its resources. It's like it's trying to hold back the flood. It's trying to plug the holes in the dike as the flood comes in. And there are more and more holes springing in, and they're finding it more and more difficult to do.
I guess it's a two-pronged question here, because it seems like then NATO, this is a desperate moment here for NATO. They will either have to throw in the towel, walk home with their tail between their legs, or commit to something perhaps larger. We've already seen that weapons don't seem to be enough. Now you're going to have to put some sort of boots on the ground. We heard from the Russian ambassador who spoke to Member of Parliament Andrew Bridgen in your neck of the woods, who said, and he told him flat out, we know that Ukrainians aren't firing these missiles. You, the British are there firing these at this. We know, and we are at war with you. So now, I guess it's up to NATO. How large do you want to go here?
I don't think that the NATO people themselves know, and I think they're very divided about this. I don't think they ever expected in their darkest nightmares a year ago that they would be in this situation. A year ago, they were talking about the Ukrainian offensive, and they were expecting that Russia would be defeated. And a year before, they'd been confident that the sanctions would have their effect. So they find themselves in a situation of impending disaster. And of course, it's a disaster they've brought on themselves because they've so invested in Ukraine. They've put so much of their own credibility on the line in Ukraine that if Ukraine falls and goes under, inevitably that credibility is going to be badly damaged. Now, they all know that. They don't have a simple answer to this. They know that whatever weapons they send to Ukraine is never going to be enough. They know that Ukraine's manpower problems are becoming impossible. So what do they do? They can talk to the Russians, but there are enormous political obstacles in the face of doing that. And it would be deeply humiliating, and it would reverse the entire course of Western policy. Or alternatively, they can escalate by sending in troops and taking on incredible risks and perhaps provoking a big popular reaction in Europe and perhaps in the United States. Or they can do nothing, hope that something turns up, and if Ukraine goes down, we'll hope that the damage to their credibility can be limited in some way. So not an attractive series of options, but it is unsurprising maybe that some people are talking about escalation, given how bad the situation is.
Yeah, can you imagine, not as you point out, not in their darkest nightmares did they anticipate over 600,000 dead, over a million casualties on the Ukrainian side, that this would be just a, I guess, a fountain of eternal human beings and resources that NATO could use over and over and over again if we just kept supplying them with weapons. Little did they realize they would wipe out an entire generation or two of Ukrainian men. To your point, who are they going to throw at this? Now we're hearing, of course, over the past 24 hours, Germany has now stepped up, lowering their conscription standards to 18 years old, and they're not going to care which gender you are. So 18 years old to go on a war footing, the UK as well. France, Macron going back and forth, and again over the weekend saying he hopes we don't have to commit troops. So to your point, it seems like NATO is all over the map right now. It doesn't really have a clear sense of what they want.
No, they don't. And I mean, in Germany, this is going to be very unpopular, reintroducing conscription shortly after, a couple of years after it was ended. Major demand in Germany to end conscription. And now they're talking of bringing it back. But that will be controversial, but it can probably just about stick. But not if German soldiers are going to be sent to fight Russia and Ukraine. I mean, that will not be acceptable to the German public at all. You're going to get major protests in Germany if anything like that happens. So, but what they have done is exactly the opposite of what they were trying to do when this conflict began. The whole plan was to weaken Russia, to make Russia weaker militarily, to destabilize its economy, to somehow isolate it from the rest of the world. Everything has turned out otherwise. Russia is militarily much more powerful. Its army is bigger. It's also much more efficient than it used to be. It's outproducing the West in weapons. It is very angry with the West, indeed, which is unsurprising, but it is. And perhaps Western leaders think that it's even angrier than it actually is, in fact. But that's another story.
Right.
And of course, it's not politically isolated in the world. It's got strong friendships with China and India, and the West has tried to undermine those, and it hasn't worked. And the economy is stable as well. So what they have done is that they have taken steps which have made the reality of the Russian threat real, which it had no reality before. They've achieved the exact opposite of what they expected. And of course, now they're rushing and they're coming up and they're saying, we've got to do something because the Russians are coming. We've got to build up our forces again. We've got to rearm, we've got to rebuild, we've got to do all of these things. But doing such things would require major revolutionary transformations in Western societies, European societies, which I'm far from convinced the governments in the West understand and would know how to manage, and which I also strongly suspect Western publics would not be keen on at all. Remilitarization of Western societies is going to be extremely difficult to do now.
I hope you're right about that. I hope you're right. But we've got some crazy leaders that don't really care what we think at the end of the day, sadly. Just look at the United States right now. I'll get you out of here on this, Alexander, which is the number of surrenders that we're seeing. You know, you're not, again, hearing this in the Western media, the number of Ukrainian men who are surrendering. As you pointed out, Russian forces are finding basically no defense at all when they've been entering these villages. And from the reports I've seen, we're seeing a lot of Ukrainian men just surrendering. They're getting these messages, I guess. I don't know exactly how they're reaching the, or how they're delivering these messages from the Russian side. Like, lay down your arms. You don't need to die in this conflict. You can just surrender. What do you know about the number of surrenders? Are we seeing more now, do you think, than we were seeing months ago?
Yes. I mean, it's been a steadily rising trend for several months. Now, it's not yet reached critical levels. We're not seeing whole units, you know, lay down their arms and surrender, but we're seeing large groups of soldiers starting to surrender. And on the first day, apparently around 50 men, Ukrainian troops laid down their arms and surrendered. Now, that may not sound like a lot, but in the context of this war, it is. And it's another sign of the general war weariness and demoralization that is starting to take hold in Ukraine. There was an article in the London Times when they were interviewing a Ukrainian soldier, and they asked him, this is the London Times, do you think this war will end in victory? And he simply said, no, Ukraine is going to lose. And that was a Ukrainian soldier in, you know, the military, under military discipline, speaking to a Western media channel, you know, a major Western media outlet. So, I mean, I think you're getting more and more of that sense right across Ukraine now, that the war is lost, that there are politicians in Kiev who don't understand it, but that's inevitable now.
I did say I was going to get you out of here a second ago. I have to ask you about Shoigu, of course.
Yeah.
The shakeup over the weekend we learned inside of the Russian military. Apparently, he's now going to be, I think, in charge of national security, removed from his position. Is this a big deal, or is this an affirmation that Putin won an election and a landslide? He has the mandate of the people to do what he wants. Do you see a shift in military strategy with this move?
I think there is a shift, actually, though the point about a mandate is a good one. First of all, it is not a demotion of Shoigu. I mean, he's been appointed to a very senior position, one which nominally is higher than the one he previously occupied. Secretary of the Security Council is a very senior position indeed in Russia. But he's also been given, and this has not been reported in the West, you have to go to the official Russian news agency TASS to see this. He's been given a whole set of new responsibilities as Secretary of the Security Council, which his predecessor in that role did not have, which basically puts Shoigu in overall charge of the Russian military industrial complex and gives him responsibility for weapons development. Now, this isn't, as I said, something that people in the West are aware of, but what I think Putin has done is he's taken Shoigu, who's a trained engineer and a very experienced and very capable manager, and who's recently been touring the factories and making sure the production of weapons increases. He's basically freed him from the responsibility of the administrative burdens in the defense ministry and given him this job of basically supervising the military industrial complex. So it's an important role, and it also means that he's now very close to Putin as national security advisor. He's Putin's effective national security advisor as well. So it's a sort of sideways shift, but an important one. Whilst the person who's taking over from him in the defense ministry, who's a man called Belousov, is a very, very experienced Soviet era economic technocrat who works in, whose background basically is in long-range planning, who was running the Russian, overall Russian economy until a few days ago. He's apparently a very well-regarded figure. And I think his job is now that military production and spending within the defense ministry has increased to such an extent to keep make sure that this is streamlined and is actually going where it's needed rather than, you know, on fancy projects or other things. So it's an interesting set of decisions. But as I said, not one that I think has been well understood in the West.
No, I think you're right about that. I think it's Putin fires his, you know, top guy. Does this mean that they're losing the war? You know, those are the types of headlines you'll see in the West, of course. So it's actually a promotion, and he actually has a much bigger job now ahead of him as NATO is trying to find out how they can throw everything they can at their military industrial complex right now. Alexander, great to see you. Where can people find your work? I mean, I follow you on multiple fronts, but where can people follow you?
Well, I have my YouTube channel, Alexander Mercuris, which you can find on YouTube and on all kinds of other platforms, BitChute, Odyssey, wherever. I also, of course, work on the Duran with my colleague and friend, Alex Cristoforo. We got our channel, The Duran, on YouTube. And we can also find me on Locals, where I'm also present, but that's as part of The Duran. You can find all my videos there. So type in my name in YouTube and you'll come to me and you'll come to all of these other places also.
Perfect. Well, must watch content all the time. Alexander, great to have you here. Thank you for your expertise as always, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Clayton. Thank you for the invitation.
And thanks so much to Alexander. Really, really appreciate his insights as always. Thank you guys so much for subscribing and being part of our great community here. We really appreciate it. Hey, I should mention, I don't mention it enough, we actually have a VIP community, our Plus Club. You know, this show is totally free to watch, right? You can subscribe for free on YouTube. You can subscribe for free on Rumble, on X. But if you'd like to take that next step and join our Redacted Rebellion, I'm so excited I'm tapping my microphone here. You can join our Redacted Rebellion. And for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalists and support what we do here. We are not a big corporation. We just have a few of us on the team trying to bring you a great show every day. So it's a way to join our private community, get exclusive interviews that you won't see other places, get access to stuff way before everyone else gets to see it as part of our private community there. The Redacted Plus Club, again, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month. Just go to redacted.inc, put in your email address and sign up and join our Redacted community on Locals. So again, thanks for joining the rebellion. I really appreciate that. Thank you guys all for being a part of our great show here. And we will see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time, streaming live. Hope you guys have a great night, everyone.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.